Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey, my friends and listeners, if you can, I know you're listening to this, but I wish you could see and listen because you're in for a real good time. I'll tell you that. We really do. So, you know, we're going to be talking about like how to decrease a little bit of stress and start loving work if you're feeling a little disenchanted. And joining us is none other than Sean McVay and Rachel Teichberg. How are you, my friends?
Hello, Dr. Christman. We're doing really well. Can I call you Adam or do you want me to call you?
Of course. Call me Adam.
All right. Yeah, you can call me Dr. McVay. No.
I love it. So to our listeners, a little bit about Rachel. So she joins us from Northeastern University with a BS in biology, and she is a certified veterinary practice manager and achieved her certified veterinary business leader in 2021. And on top of that, she's also a certified emotional intelligence practitioner, certified workplace mediator, and certified trainer in workplace conflict resolution. So she loves building training programs. Her passion for helping veterinary practices thrive is what brought her to VGP, as well as the national and international stage, working with teams and managing their finances, improving culture. The list goes on. So I can't think of another person better to talk more about that. And then also the Sean McVay. There has to be the word the.
Declarative. I'm the.
Yes, he's. If you don't know him, I'll tell you, he is an incredible.
If you're under 40, you don't know me.
To the Gen Zs out there, that he's a distinguished career in veterinary healthcare administration. He became a partner and the CEO of Pathway Veterinary Management, served as an industry consultant and speaker. He is recognized around the world for his unique management style and his experience in building successful veterinary practice. He was the CEO of iCare for Animals, a veterinary ophthalmology company, as well as a hospital administrator for the Veterinary Referral Center of Colorado. He's also the founder and owner of Veterinary Specialists in Private Practice and served as the first non-DVM board member of the American Animal Hospital Association, too. So quite the accolades there that we have in the
that
room.
That, folks, here is like 30 years of life right there. Is what
My goodness.
Is.
quite a legacy that we have there. Well, let's talk about it. Rachel, I want to talk about, like, you know, when you hear, how does it feel, I guess, when you hear like a veterinary team member that says, like, I'm so unhappy with what I do and I want to start loving work again. Like, how have our colleagues fallen out of love with work? What's happened?
Yeah, well, the last couple of years have been really challenging. And I'll tell you, this is exactly what they say. I call up a practice and I'm like, hey guys, how's it going? And they're like, ah. Or it's like, oh my God, it's crazy. Or, you know, it's just busy. I hear that a lot. And all of these, I think, are code words for work has gotten incredibly challenging. And it's not that we don't love the veterinary medicine. It's not that we've lost our passion or our commitment to the industry necessarily. But I think that love for work, that wake up in the morning and be excited to go to work, has started to fade because we have really just been struggling. I mean, you know, the pandemic was hard on all of our teams. We worked incredibly long hours. We had more patients for many of the practices than they really knew what to do with. And so on one side, you're like, wow, revenue is up. Appointments are up. That sounds really good.
Except,
turnover is up too. And so is burnout. And, you know, a lot of practices are choosing to sell over the last couple of years. We've seen a huge increase in consolidation and that's starting to go up. And I think that just a lot of people are just tired. And though they love the work that they do, actually getting to work and dealing with the challenges of the day-to-day are becoming overwhelming. And it's getting hard for people to get out of that rut a little bit.
Right. So yeah. What are you seeing? What are you seeing in your experience?
Well, you know, the same thing that Rachel is seeing, but I will come at it, obviously, like I always do as a clinician myself. And I happen to be a psychotherapist and social worker, which we didn't really talk about in my intro, but that's kind of, I think, what makes all of my career in veterinary medicine unique. And what I see happening is classic depression / PTSD / you know, I speak a lot about emotional intelligence, and that is really a scientific term now for how you take care of self. Mm-hmm. You know, you cannot take care of yourself, love yourself, be well, all of those buzzwords, unless you have the capacity to be emotionally intelligent, which really is taking a hard, reflective look at yourself and being honest about your deficiencies, your capacity, your capabilities. And to that end, veterinarians are not successful. We see it everywhere. The way that veterinary and veterinary teams cope with distress and trauma is to ignore, push forward, ignore the symptoms of their body and their mind, and create and just keep working. And they just keep working. And what's happening is they are psychologically shorting out. I believe that there is burnout. And I believe that there is compassion fatigue. I don't mean to discount those things that are real when they happen. But I think the vast majority of what we are calling compassion fatigue and burnout in veterinary medicine is mental health issues. And those mental health issues are depression, anxiety, and lack of social coping. What's happening to veterinarians right now and care providers is they are being forced to think outside of the box. They're being forced to get outside of their comfort zone. They're being forced to deal with conflict from the client, the consumer, the government, the politics, their own staff, because now they have 25 people to manage instead of 3. And so veterinarians have come kicking and screaming into the information era, and we know that to be true. But the result of that denial about change, in my opinion, has created a workforce that's a bit traumatized. And so, you know, we only have 20, 25 minutes to talk about this stuff, and we could go on about it. But that's my 30,000 foot perspective. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it sounds, we're talking about compassion fatigue, we're talking about burnout. And Rachel, I want to back up even a little bit more and just talk to the listeners a little bit. And this may seem like a dumb question, but what is stress? What is it?
Yeah, well, stress is ultimately a very primal response, right? We have a situation that triggers this change in our internal chemistry, right? Like we have these hormones that get released. And so even though we're not, you know, living in the woods and being chased by animals anymore, and we're not hunting and gathering, we still have the same biological responses to those stressors. So instead of, you know, a bear coming up from behind a tree, I have the stress of an emergency walking through the door, and that triggers that same response in me. And so we all know it as that fight, flight, freeze response. And so what happens is that our bodies immediately sort of go into this mode where it's about safety. Am I going to save myself by fighting? Am I going to save myself by flighting, by running away? Am I going to save myself by just freezing? And we see those responses play out in practice. They just look a lot different than physically putting up your hands to fight or like literally running away. But we have our other ways, you know, what we see in practice is that, you know, the freezing might look like someone actually panicking, right? Someone who's just like actually overwhelmed, where if there's an emergency, they might just be like, oh my gosh, like I really just can't even come up with something. So that does happen. But regards to, you know, flight might look like an emotional shutdown where someone just, it's gone. Like, right, I'm in, and suddenly just I'm shut down. I don't talk to you, I don't communicate. That's what that looks like. And that fight is all that conflict, right? It's snapping at somebody, it's being short with someone, it's slamming the door. And so even though we're not in those sort of natural habitats that we used to be all those many years ago, those responses are still natural in us. And so we see it all the time. But when we are in a stress response and we deal with chronic stress, which I think is true for the majority of the people that work in practices, right? It is long-term, but not as high most of the time. So it just kind of stays with us. We're more likely to get triggered by more stress because we're already sort of at a higher level. And then when that happens, yeah. So we can't prioritize, we can't focus, we fall apart, which in turn then leads to kind of this cycle of more and more stress. And ultimately, a lot of that comes down to, we just don't ever close that cycle. We never end that stress cycle where we would have many, many years ago after that bear. If we saved our life, right? We ran away from that bear. We'd be like, woo, okay, that was scary, but I lived and now I can celebrate that. Bear. Yeah, exactly.
And you eat the bear and sleep in its hide for the next year and go, exactly. Hi, I won.
Yeah.
You know, to that also, that I think is important for a veterinary hospital to run successfully, there have to be predictable processes and systems in place. And two things are making it harder for that to happen in hospital. What Rachel just so articulately illustrated, that fight, flight, or freeze, I just can't even follow the rules. And I, furthermore, I don't want any restrictions or confinement in how I do things because I'm so uptight. But we're also minus some people too. So in veterinary medicine, being minus people means being minus a part of how you function. It's like having a baseball team with no shortstop and everybody just starts hitting line drives that way. You know, it makes for a very exhausting game all day long.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And so, Sean, how do you recommend that we complete that stress cycle?
Yes. Somebody's got to take charge. And by somebody, the practice manager, the medical director, the owner, the leadership team of the hospital needs to recognize the symptoms of what's happening and start treating your hospital like you would yourself or any patient. Diagnose your hospital. And if what's required is some sort of stress relief, that happens by shutting the doors for 2 hours once a week. That happens by doing one-on-ones with people and allowing them to release the energy that they have. Stress is, it's kinetic, it's energy inside of us, and it is released. Talk therapy helps, but screaming at shit helps. Punching stuff helps. Unfortunately, what people do is they smoke a lot. You ever see something? Nobody smokes before stress. They all smoke after stress or after sex, or it's like... And smoking is just like yoga with carcinogens is what it is. And so we need to provide timeout breaks. We need to start talking about mental health in the practice. Like it should be okay, like Naomi Osaka in tennis, to say, you know what? I'm not mentally well right now. And it doesn't mean I'm not a professional veterinarian. It just means that I need to do a couple of things today so that I can perform like a professional veterinarian. Otherwise, you're going to have to manage me being a depressed veterinarian down the road. And those things might be, I need one less case today. Let's move that out. Let's take elective procedures off the table today and only do what walks in the door. Is that ideal? No. But if your symptoms are such that you're bleeding out psychologically, which I think is what we're describing, we need to not only suture, but we need to plug the wound a little bit. And it's it's the antithesis of what veterinarians do. They work harder, not smarter. They turn on more energy when they need to be conserving it, and they deny the existence of their problems.
Yeah.
It, literally to the grave, because, you know, you're programmed, Adam, Dr. Crispin, to believe that you and you alone need to fix everything. And if you don't, there's something wrong with you. In fact, you're somehow less than adequate as a professional and even as a human being. And many of you, in addition to that, take on the responsibility of being that source of inspiration for your staff too. You are not pastors, you're not preachers, you're not rabbis, you're not counselors. You're not equipped to manage 30 dysfunctional people and a team of animals. You know, they need to manage themselves, and that's not gonna happen in an environment that doesn't promote wellness.
Yeah. And, you know, Rachel, you're a certified veterinary practice manager too. Do you find in your experience, I love what Sean's saying, he's saying it so nicely, is the fact that, you know, as veterinarians, we think we got it. I know you're worried about everyone on the team, but do you find that the veterinarians tend to be the ones that are like, you have to really check in on more so than like other team members, or is it kind of across the boards on everyone?
No, I think absolutely. I think that especially as that business owner, I think that they know that they're being watched. And so that idea of keeping it together is really important, except we're not necessarily fooling anybody. Yeah, so yeah. I think that, yes, we want to pretend like we're fine. And look, I've been there. I was a very sick practice manager. I was going through a lot of health issues. I refused to tell anybody what was going on. And I was lying to myself. They knew I wasn't well, and it became the big elephant in the room. Now, granted, my stress manifested itself physically, which I know it does for a lot of people. Not to say there wasn't obviously a huge mental component in it as well, but I was trying to hide it. I wasn't fooling anybody. And all that it was doing was creating a wider gap between me and my team that I thought I was trying to help and wasn't doing an effective job because I wasn't being transparent and authentic, and I wasn't in it with them. I was trying to protect them from what I was going through.
Pretend you make it look like there's something wrong with them because you're not bothered by what's going on with you.
Right.
Yeah. And I thought I was doing everyone a favor, and all it did was isolate me personally and isolate anyone else who could have used some support from another person who was struggling in a similar way. And I think that that's like a really important piece of that completing the stress cycle is actually that camaraderie that you can have, not a complaint session, not just sitting there and, you know, moaning about all the problems, whatever is going on. This is about actually having community and friendships. And I think that that's actually a big piece of being a practice coach. And I think that that's why I had a practice coach when I was in practice and I loved it so much. I worked with Julia, who's our director of coaching operations. And so now being on that other side of the phone, I can feel the relief that someone has by communicating with someone who understands. And a lot of times we get this socially, right? After a long day, you want to go have a night with your friends, right? And suddenly, even though I'm not talking about all the stress at work, I start to feel that sort of lift and go away. And that is a way to complete that stress cycle, is not by complaining, not
drinking,
by talking.
Is that what you just said, Rachel? Drinking is how we complete that?
Drinking may or may not be a part of it, maybe. But it's just that sort of that camaraderie. And so I do think that being transparent about how you feel and understanding that if you're feeling it, someone else is definitely feeling it. And likely if you are in that position, that high position in the practice, it's probably even more impactful than you realize because everyone's dancing around you. You know, they're more worried about what emotional reaction you might have to something than focusing on the patient, right? We're too distracted with what the could be, should be's, don't do this, don't do that, because we don't want to make this person upset. We don't want to set them off today. They seem to be on edge. And so everyone's just dancing around it. And so if we just brought it out into the open, talked about it, and came up with some ideas, you know, there's a lot that we can do in practice. When I was in practice, one of the beautiful things that happened sort of organically that I loved was that whenever a dog passed away, we always made a paw print, right? I'm sure every practice mostly does this at this point, right? And I actually had hired somebody who came from an art background. And so she did a lot with sculpture and painting. And so what she wanted to do was she hated that we were throwing away all that extra clay, right? Because we make a print, like we'd put it in a heart shape or whatever. And then we take that extra clay and we toss it. And she was like, why are we throwing away all this clay? And so what we did was after every patient that we did a paw print for, we took that extra clay and we would actually build something with it. So we'd build like a make-believe animal, or sometimes we would actually like try to like create the pet in like this little like clay statue form. And it was so beautiful. And euthanasias are a really hard thing for a lot of our team members to go through. And by completing that sort of cycle personally, by doing this paw print, putting that pet away, and then making something, being creative in that moment where I could kind of harness that energy and put it into something creative, was so easy and beautiful. And then of course we had all these beautiful little statues in our treatment room that reminded us of all of these beautiful lives that came through our doors. And so, you know, it could be something like that. It could be, you know, printing out mandalas and throwing them with, you know, crayons in the break room while people are on break. Reminding people to breathe during the day. You know, it could just be that. It's just, I have a breathing alarm on my watch that goes off every 2 hours because sometimes like I don't, I just don't. And I take that first breath and I'm like, and it's just like, I feel revitalized and I can calm myself down.
Right. And you know, Sean, because, you know, I've known you and I know that we love to laugh. And it's one thing that I do want to mention, too. Is laughter the best medicine then in what we do?
Well, it is absolutely, psychologically, it's one of the single biggest predictors of a happy life and a happy environment. In fact, when Dr. Goleman, who does emotional intelligence work, he's kind of the grandfather of this movement. He did a study with insurance companies of all boring things and found that there was a 75% correlation between levels of laughter in the workplace and profitability. In other words, so people who laugh more make more. And it started to switch his way of thinking. He did emotional intelligence work initially to prove what motivates people at work, essentially. And you know what he found was that emotions had a huge impact on, and how people feel at work had a huge impact on how people perceive their work environment. And so laughter is technologically the shortest distance between two brains. It's empirically impossible to fake laughter. I mean, you can fake it and it's funny, but people know when you're faking laughter. So it literally is, if I'm laughing and you're laughing, and you're from this side of the world and I'm from this side of the world, we are one. You know, laughter and music, believe it or not, are those two things that bring people together. So yeah, lack of laughter means we're kind of sick, and there needs to be more laughter. However, laughter at the expense of other people, sarcasm, et cetera, is a little toxic. So that yeah. I will say the laughter has to be congenial and uplifting, not at the expense of someone.
I will say at the height of the pandemic, I came across like all the crazy things we all found online. I found a laugh therapy through, it was actually through Airbnb. They do online experiences now. Oh. And my sister and I went to laugh therapy. We had no idea what to expect from this. And it was so interesting because we both were like, what is this? This is crazy. And the guy that founded it, actually, he did it because he was so incredibly depressed after a death that he had gone through, a death of someone close to him. And he just needed to laugh more. And so he actually started by fake laughing and forcing himself to laugh. And so he created this whole workshop around laughter, which if anyone wants to really be vulnerable and be silly in front of your team, talk about levity. You know, this is, I highly recommend, I'm just going to plug this guy shamelessly because it was so fun looking up laugh therapy. It was great. And you know what, at the end of it, I didn't necessarily go in feeling these like heavy emotions that particular day, but after, you know, 30 minutes of laughing, these big belly laughs, I felt kind of good after. Kind of felt like a workout. You know, those endorphins that you get when after like a good run or whatever. I kind of felt that. And it was like I was buzzing. It felt really good. Definitely recommend.
Yeah.
You said something earlier I just want to touch upon about is the leader have to be focused on more by the coach or the team members? And I that's what I heard anyway. I think one more plug for why the leaders need to be focused on more is because they tend to ask less for help than the frontline does, because that's their perception that leaders don't ask for help, as Rachel was alluding to. And secondarily, every single thing that they do is emulated just like children. So when a leader's coping mechanisms are toxic or dysfunctional, that's what they're teaching everybody else to do as well. And so you can pretty much feel the climate of a hospital and trace it back to one person or two, and that is the owner/leader of the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, you know, it's like taking the temperature in a family. Mom and dad have the biggest influences. They're the spiciest flavors in the soup of the family. You have to look at the leader in that way. And it's rare to have dysfunctional team members survive in a group that is led by somebody who's got their stuff together. Mm. And here's the difference between mental health and EQ. If you recognize that you have some issues psychologically or leadership or trauma or troubles, and you try and work on them, but your own feelings get in the way and sabotage you of making progress there, that's how you know it's time for a therapeutic intervention. Awareness is, I just know I need to do this, and I can kind of make myself do this. I can go from child and impulsive or reactionary to I am a functioning adult, and this is the right choice to make here, and I'm not obsessed, and I'm not in fight or flight or freeze. If I want to do that, but I can't do it, that is where you know you need therapeutic intervention, not just because EQ is not willpower. You know, wellness is not willpower. It is the awareness that I want to be well and I can't get well. Yeah. So what's that mean? I've got some blocks there that are keeping me stuck, and only good therapy really will get you through that. It's that or denial and push it down and find a different coping mechanism for that anxiety, which we know is, you know, drugs, alcohol, excessive exercise, spending, depression, suicide. I mean, we could spend a whole other podcast just talking about that, but it's life and death, really. I think that people, it's not just leadership. You cannot be a good leader if you're not mentally healthy. You just can't be.
No, you can't. And Rachel, with what we're doing today, what we're talking about, it's one thing to like listen. It's another thing to put it into action. So what are some things that listeners can start doing by putting these tools into action?
Yeah. So I would probably start by having a real heart to heart with your team. Let's talk about stress. Let's like have this conversation and talk about how we feel in practice. And what are moments where we feel like it gets overwhelming? What are the days? I remember when I was in practice surgery days, like I remember like I would purposefully have like a ritual in the morning before a surgery day. Sometimes if we knew we had like 3 dentals and 2 spays and 2 neuters, like if I knew it was going to be a day, it was like, oh, I got to make sure I stop at Dunkin' Donuts on the way and do this and do this and say my little prayers. Exactly. I gotta buy the doctor's favorite candy just in case things go crazy. Yeah. We had a playlist. Like, so we need to talk about that stuff. Like, do we need to have rituals for days that we anticipate are crazy? And what about all the days we can't anticipate are crazy, which are now many of them. And so I think we just need to talk about it, be real about it, but also actually just do some simple things. Like I said, you know, even just having something where people can draw on the table, we can have opportunities and recommend and try to enforce people move during the day, go walk around the block on your break. Yeah, exactly. Put on breathing alarms and put signs on the wall. Like, have you taken a breath today? Like, this is your reminder to breathe, because literally breathing, you know, if you're being chased by that bear, like we were talking about, what's going on? Like your breathing's really shallow, right? It's all happening really, really fast. So just by like interrupting that breathing cycle and taking a few deep breaths, literally will tell your body, I'm safe. Because when I'm safe, I don't have to be breathing like I'm running a marathon. I can take these long, deep breaths and calm down. That's a tool that's available to us all the time. You can take deep breaths while you're staring at a client who's giving you a history. Nobody needs to even know it's happening. So reminding people to breathe, giving them the tools, talking about it, and making a plan. You know, I think just figuring out how we can, if the team is going to score their stress level at the practice at a 10, what could we do to get it down to an 8? Like, just start there. No one's telling you that you have to turn it off tomorrow. We're not
leaving it. That's it. The idea that this is not like, you know, we used to say cancer, like cancer. You know, now we have to say, or, you know, I was around when HIV and AIDS came out. It was like set in silence. Now we have to say mental health. This is a mental health issue. We need to talk. So the answers are literally things, Adam, like breathing for 10 seconds, being direct about how I feel, but not dumping my feelings on you, which requires some education. So I think normalizing self-care and making it a part of what you have to do, as opposed to allowing for adaptive behaviors, which are all filed under fight or flight. And finally, start labeling those areas and behaviors. Rachel said, like, if we know checkout is a really crazy time, and how can we simplify that process? How can I have a download time after the morning drop-off of 50 day school patients? You know, how can I have a time where we now have 10 minutes to just go in the basement and bitch at one another about that? Because we know every day 50 drop. So acknowledging all of that kind of stuff, and then just actually walking through and doing it. People will be, there's so much power in just verbalizing what's inside of me and letting it out.
Right. Yeah. And just having a little bit more fun. And again, that brings in the levity, brings in the laughter. You know, how can we smile more? How can I make someone smile? You know, if someone's stressed out, like, why not give them a funny face, right? Like there's something that happens that, you know, if you've ever been really upset and you're crying and that moment comes when someone says something funny, you know, and you're just like, you're kind of crying and you're laughing, but it's just that kind of release. And, you know,
terms of endearment.
Maybe we're not hysterically crying all the time, but, you know, having that moment where you can let someone in, bring a little laughter, bring a little bit of joy, I think really goes a long way in practice too.
Steel Magnolias. Here, get wheezy.
Okay, yeah.
That was another reference for people over 40. Thank you.
These are great, great, great techniques and examples too. So thank you so much. And where can we find out more information about either like VGP or Sean or Rachel? Where can we find more information about any of it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So of course, our website, which is vgpvet.com. We are on all the social medias at vgpvet. We do really great workshops throughout the year on emotional intelligence. We just did one, pathway planning, which is strategic planning, and also conflict management. We'll be doing We'll be doing a third party mediation workshop later on this year as well, trying to give managers some more tools to help their teams through conflict. And otherwise, yeah, we'll be doing other travels with DVM 360, going to the conferences. So Sean will be at those. But yeah, follow us on social, go to our website. You know, like I said, I think working with a practice coach was one of those lifelines for me. Like I said, you know, it's hard for managers and owners and leadership to ask for help. And that's exactly where that coaching component comes in. It's someone you can talk to, someone you can confide in, someone who can help give you some support and answers. And it really is it's a beautiful thing. I love being on this side of the phone, supporting practices through these challenges that they face, you know, every day. So I highly recommend exploring that too.
And one last option for those of you that are a little more isolated or aren't a big practice and you can't afford to go to CE at Mass, check out Ignite. Because Ignite is our online platform to access all things coaching, not just practice management, but medicine as well. So it's an online platform, kind of think of it as Venn on steroids for the modern day, that includes practice management, communication. We have a reception training program, a CSR training program. The whole goal of Ignite was to bring the community together without having to go to conferences necessarily. So VGP wanted to be that venue where you could go and get your needs met in almost every way educationally. So hopefully that's helpful.
It is helpful. Well, we got to give a shout out to Dr. Jill Clark too, of course.
Oh yeah.
Ignite, the founder.
Yes, Ignite. We love you, Jill. Well, Sean, Rachel, thank you so much for your time today and your expertise.
Thanks, Dr. Adam.
Yes, thank you for all you're doing in this profession.
Hey, and come back. Let's do a bike ride around Lake Austin.
Yes. Okay. No, no bats. No bats.
All right. See you later.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Don't forget to rate this podcast too. It always helps us. And don't forget to subscribe and stay safe out there. Continue to stay positive. We'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay positive.